Is anyone here for the first time? Welcome. Thank you for joining us. I'd like to talk a little bit about authentic meditation, because authentic meditation is actually one and the same with authentic living. Many times when we actually go to meditate, what we're actually engaging in is concentration. And concentration is a tendency to attempt to focus. And once there is some degree of focus taking place on whatever is occurring, and usually, you know, if you noticed in the last hour, it's been a variety of different things that occurred. Okay? So if anyone were able to stay focused on something for about 30 seconds or maybe 45 seconds, one singular thing, like a sensation. Of course, it would be changing, but to stay with something like the breath for 30 or 40 seconds, and you would actually go into bliss. Okay, you would go into a blissful state of absorption. You'd go into a jhanic state. Okay, jhana means absorption. Now, you notice that probably didn't happen tonight, did it, for too many people? Okay? Anybody go into an absorptive jhanic state of bliss? No. Okay. Yeah, you did? Okay, well, let me...
A couple times.
A couple times, okay. Well, you get the brownie points, you get a star on your third eye. The blissful one. I want to hear more about your experience, but let me give this little bit of talk to you, and then you can enlighten us on how we can all get there. So let's say more of us had that experience instead of just one of us. What happens generally when you get concentrated and you get focused to that extent is you feel very, very good. Okay, your problems go away. Right? You may even forget that you have a body. Yeah, you certainly can forget that you have something to become later, right? Work out. Of course, as I said, you forget about your past. Okay, afflictive emotions are gone, and there's just this beautiful sense of absorption. However, regardless of how beautiful, wonderful, blissful, happy you are, and it's a kind of happiness, it's impermanent. It comes and it goes. And in some cases, if that absorption has led to quite a bit of happiness, quite a bit of contentment, quite a bit of bliss, what follows is quite a bit of unhappiness, because it seems very, very different. Okay. In fact, the doldrums come back. Depression. A good friend of mine was a monk for 5 years in Burma. And he described for me some of the specifics of his meditation. And he would go into absorptive states, go into bliss. Now, when he got back into America after, you know, this period of training, he actually, you know, discovered that he really didn't know how to function very well in the world. You know, he didn't really know how to hold down a job. And he didn't know how to talk very well with people for a while. He was pretty disassociated. And eventually he got extremely depressed. Okay. Now, that depression, of course, doesn't last. Any kind of depression, any kind of mood state doesn't last. And yet, if you, through your concentration that you're calling meditation, have fixated upon something as what it is that you're trying to experience or keep, you're going against the nature of the way things really are. You are trying to swim upstream. That isn't to say that getting concentrated or getting absorbed is something to avoid. That would be ridiculous. Okay. But let's understand very clearly that concentration is not meditation. And in the name of meditation, many people will attempt to concentrate, get a certain amount of concentration, whether it ends up being blissful or not. It feels good to get concentrated. And so then the tendency is there to want to, in some way or other, repeat that. Now let's go into that. What is going on there? There's an attempt to control your experience. Okay. Did you notice that at any point during the last hour, the attempt to control experience? That's a very deeply conditioned and rooted tendency in the human being. until it's not there. A tendency to control. We want to understand, we want to know, we want to sort of be okay or pin down what is true, what is real. Okay. And if that which we're going for in our concentration / meditation is a quality of happiness or peace, that's what many people might say if you ask them, what do you really want? I want peace. There's a fewer number of people, if you ask them, what do you really want, they'll actually say to you, I want to know who I really am. Have you ever heard anybody say that? When you ask them, what do you really want? Okay. Not all of us ask that question, even of ourselves or others. I often do not hear people saying, what I really want is to know what or who I really am. That is the perennial question. That is the fundamental question. That is the inquiry of inquiries. And that is what meditation, or authentic meditation, or spiritual inquiry, or relationship with someone that you might call a spiritual teacher, the purpose of that experience, of relationship of that kind, of meditation that's authentic, or inquiry, is to find out who you really are while you are living in this body. Notice the distinction? While you are living in this body. I just made a distinction that suggests we're not the body. And yet it's a vehicle, isn't it? And when it works well, when it isn't hurting, yeah, when it's not constipated, when the head part doesn't hurt, when the neck isn't this way or that way, when the energy's flowing freely, it's a nice vehicle. You might even feel like suddenly you've become a Porsche. Or if that's not your style, you're some other kind of smooth running piece of equipment. Everything's working well. And when everything's working well in this vehicle, there's a tendency to not think about it. Have you noticed that? To not have to be focused on it. To not have to work with it. To not have to change it. Make it different. It is as it is. That experience actually is the nature of the body. The nature of the natural body. That's beyond preference. That's beyond judgment. And in a way, it's beyond much of the mental conditioning that we have about ourselves as related to body. So it's a funny little thing, because in one sense, it's a vehicle for awakening. In another sense, if we're not careful, we become identified with this thing to the extent that it actually becomes a prison. And I'm not talking just about the body as a prison. I'm talking about the states of mind that come up for human beings can feel imprisoning. And so to come into some degree of concentration, even just for a little while, like 30 seconds of relative concentration. I'm not talking about absorption, but I'm talking about relative concentration. For a human being who hasn't experienced that, feels incredibly good. You feel free for that period of time. And what are you free from? From everything that was before, from everything that might come later, from concerns, from worries, and from stress. Thus, it would make sense that human beings touching that would want to repeat it. Fair enough? However, if it's looked at more deeply, you're chasing the ever-fleeting carrot. And even if you get a good nibble on it, away it goes. So once that's realized, that concentration, nothing wrong with it, but that it will not answer the fundamental question. It will not address the essential, original nature of what you are. Then meditation can begin. Meditation in the sense that there is the possibility in sitting here right now that there need not be control over anything. There need not be any preference for anything. There need not be any judgment for anything. There need not be any interference with anything. Now, even saying this letting go of control is a misnomer. Because in the name of opening, one could start to begin to attempt to let go of control. Who's going to do that? Somebody who is trying to control their way into not controlling things? Whoo! And it doesn't just feel like a circle, it can feel like a spiral. What's realized is that no one lets go of control. That letting go is actually the experience of the natural flow of existence. And when that natural flow is not interfered with, then life, or the human, is constantly in this flow. Without anything outside of that flow. Okay, now what I'm talking about is something that can be realized in a second. And then once again, some interferences can come in. Traditional term in Buddhism would be clinging, grasping, attachment can come in, wanting it to be different. And if someone is then going to work on not being attached, that someone is attached to not being attached. Again, all I'm talking about right now is once that's seen, once that mechanism, that process is seen, something of authentic meditation can open up, which is beyond concentration, and it's beyond trying to control or manipulate or change anything at all. Now, everyone in this room, in fact, every human being, how many of us now on planet Earth? What's that guy's name? Russell, who has that website, and he has his website where he shows how many people are being born, and it's happening very fast. What's his name? Peter Russell?
Peter Russell,
thank you. That's excellent. I looked at his website once and I went, wow, that's happening pretty fast. I wonder if that's accurate. Ooh, they're coming in fast. How do you come up with that? And then it kind of felt frightening to see, wow, geez, you know. I didn't have over there on the other scale the people passing away. So I started to think about that. I went, okay, over here they're coming in, and over here they're passing away. He didn't represent that, but that's probably happening too. Okay, I feel kind of better about that because I'm starting to get kind of crowded. Right here in my room by myself, you know, looking in the computer screen. It's filling up. Expansion. So you begin to see that the nature of things, the nature of life, is completely non-dualistic. The nature of life is completely whole, complete, unfragmented. And that, those words that I'm saying point to something that every human being, 6.5 or 6.75 billion, know, not really even know, are. Everyone here, let's go with this room, everyone here knows the childlike wonder of beingness that is not tainted, that is unfettered. Right? What I'm saying here is that everyone knows what liberation is. However, in many cases it's been shrouded, it's been covered, it's been forgotten, so much so that it's believed that it doesn't even exist. But then why do the traditions use words like original nature? Original nature. Natural, original nature. Now, sometimes the word state is introduced, and I don't particularly like to introduce the word state, the natural state, okay? Because it seems to me that the natural flow of beingness isn't a state. Like concentration's a state, or anger's a state, or fear's a state, or love's a state, happiness is a state. What I'm talking about is something that actually doesn't come and go. And again, these words can only point. They can't get it. They can just point at it. And if they point in some way that's effective, there will be a momentary, or more than momentary, recognition, that's another word, aha, something aligns and feels correct or true. Nothing is being said here that isn't already known in the, as the original naturalness that you are. And this is an unlearning more than a learning, you see. Because what I'm suggesting is the awakening, right, is actually a reawakening. And that's why so many people say, as they begin to see more clearly what they really are, they realize, I've always been this. I've always been this. I just forgot. I got distracted. I got lost. I fell asleep. Of course, that's an interesting concept. I fell asleep into the waking state. I fell asleep into the dream of conditioning and believing that I am a body-mind, that I am separate, that I need this, that I need this, that I need this, that I need this, that I won't be okay if I don't get this, 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 this. That's called the prison. That's called the prison of the body-mind process. So, more important than amount of time that you're sitting around so-called meditating is the attitude with which this is approached. The attitude is way more significant than quantity of investment in your spiritual practice or path. Okay? Because what's going to happen if you get hooked onto some kind of path that you think is working for you? Where that path is going to lead you is nowhere. Or another way to say that is, that path is going to lead you right back, bingo, here. Poof. You're not going anywhere in that sense on a so-called path of awakening. What's happening is that which you think you are, that which you've invested in, that which you believe in, that which you're attached to, that which you'll fight for, defend, dream about, wake up in, so to speak, from deep sleep, wake up in, falls away. And it may fall away a little bit, and there's a thinning, and it may go ka-chunk. If it goes completely ka-chunk, then you're experiencing what Ajahn Chah, the great Thai meditation teacher, said. When there's complete letting go, then every single worry and strife goes away. He said it a little differently, actually, now that I can quote him. He said, all of the strife and worry with this world is gone. And what he meant by this world is the world as it's perceived. Whether that world be perceived as an inner world, like my inner world, or the outer world. All that goes away. That's very critical to see, that no one can let go of control. Because actually there was never any control to begin with. What we believe to be control is an idea or a tendency that we've associated with, lumped onto, clicked in with, in an attempt to what? To be free? To be unfettered? To be at ease? What an irony. And when that's seen, by no one, it's just seeing happens. And no one can actually create the conditions for that. And yet, we can be interested in that. We can incline towards that. Quantity of meditation on a cushion or in a perfect meditation environment, so to speak, if there is such a thing, is not actually going to help, although the mind thinks it does. And it's seen through that tendency to believe and think, this is the way it is, this is going to help, this is going to make a difference. I mean, this sounds radical, okay? But awakening to what you really are can happen just as easily while eating a Burger King French fry. Or standing in what I find to be a very unpleasant airport, like the one in Houston. Please, Lord, let me die anywhere but in the Houston airport. What we often go for is an ambience. This is why people want to get their spot meditatively, their house, their relationships, their situation, get it all just so that then I can be myself. Why bother waiting? Because that's a long time. People are lost in a myth at times of, I will really open up and be who I know I can be when I retire, because my job is imprisoning me. I have to do this. You see, this is insane. Duty is a different kind of thing. When you bring a human being or contribute to bringing a human being here, when you're invested in research that's about cancer or about pox virus or about helping human beings, and your passion's involved in it, that's a beautiful thing. And it feels very good to be involved in that. But let's be very clear that the heart of the Bhagavad Gita is actions without an actor, doings without a doer. When that's clear, then the free flow of creative, passionate involvement, even in deep social activism or whatever it is that you're drawn to, can happen. And it's a beautiful, I mean beautiful, pristine, sharp razor's edge that gets ridden, where it's okay that it go any way that it needs to go, and you do absolutely the best you can. People understand this in the field of athletics. They're free in the expression. Fantastic, because the awakening does not suggest that you must have this lifestyle or that lifestyle. One thing that happens very naturally is it doesn't make any sense to harm others. That tendency goes away. Or if it's still there, that possibility that you can harm others with your speech, with an action, which is a grosser form of harming others, and then inside is with the thoughts. Okay? Judging other people. Okay? Criticizing other people. Putting other people down. Okay? That tendency of mind, okay, that separating tendency of mind, right? That's a form of harming. Well, I'm talking about in terms of your expression of your vital force into the flow of the stream of existence in support of other people, because, you know, there's a lot of people who don't have the opportunity to sit and even consider what awakening is, and I can't forget them. I'm sorry, I can't. I don't have to apologize to them, but I can't. I can't say, you know, I don't feel you down on the street corner there. I don't feel that hardness lying on the pavement as opposed to a cushy bed for bedtime. Let's be very clear, though, in the nature of being. Okay, there is no higher or lower. There is no better or worse. And here's a real kicker. There actually is no evolution. That's very difficult for the mind to get, because the mind itself is about and involved in evolving, developing, manifesting. And so at the same time I'm talking about change, I'm talking about development, I'm also talking about that which development happens in. This is just one way to say it. And that is something that doesn't change. And that is your original essential nature. No word can get us there. The word can only point. But if there's something of a recognition that not only is there silence there, here, but that you are that silence. Not only is there stillness here, but that you are that stillness. Not only is there spaciousness here, but that you are that spaciousness. Then that so-called dualistic tendency of mind dissipates or falls away altogether, and you realize what you are. To say it one way, is everything and nothing simultaneously.
Can you say that again? I'm sorry.
Yeah, what you are, Huxley, is everything and nothing simultaneously. And everythingness, as that opens for humans, they feel connected to everything. Like that. Wow. Big. Right? Like no skin. Everything. The nothing, a little bit more difficult to describe, the nothing is, it's not like contraction. If the everything is expansion, the nothing's not contraction. The nothing is simple, bare silence. And that's just a word. Simple, bare stillness. Not that that's happening. You are that. That idea or that perception that it's happening to me. Yeah, you see the separation? It's happening to me. There's silence and it's happening to me. That goes away and you are that silence. You are that nothingness. You are that stillness. And then what comes up in that stillness or in that silence is the everythingness. You see? You're everything and you're nothing simultaneously. See? And in that there's room for everything. Okay, can I move my arms like this? Does it help? You know, sometimes you get away with big gestures, you know, or little gestures. But the gesture says more than the words, sometimes. See, and the mind can't understand this because the mind is part of the everythingness. So why should the mind have to understand this? Because if it tries to understand this, it's going to complicate it. And this is, again, a very deep function, because if you look at what this thing is made up of, and again, very, very core, essential, simple, direct, potent teaching from the historical Buddha, the body-mind process is made up of five things. The body itself, that's the form. Feeling, which is pleasant, unpleasant, neutral, with sense contact, ongoing through the course of the flow of existence. What else? Mental formations, thoughts, mind states, perceptions and consciousness. What consciousness does is it knows, that's all, without any additional. If we could just take consciousness and just go, whoosh, pull it out, you can't do this, separate it from the other aggregates. Aggregate just means collection. Separate the consciousness, and then consciousness, all it does is know objects, yeah, without any filtration, without any interference. Perception and feeling combines with consciousness, and you get the slice of the moment that you call this way or that way. Not to mention that you start to think about that in certain ways, not to mention, actually I'm mentioning it, that it conditions the sense of the body. Okay, that's just a short little wrap line on the five aggregates, which is a huge, important, essential teaching that deconstructs for those who it deconstructs for. Not everyone will it work for, but for some, it deconstructs the notion of solidity. As the notion of solidity dissipates, then so too the sense of separation tends to dissipate. And that can be just wonderfully liberating, like, wow, baby. Like, just make you cry with joy. Or, for some people, if the conditioning is such, they get terrified. Just big time fear comes up. Terror. Like, holy smokes. It's true. There is only non-separation. There is only unicity. There is only wholeness. Holy smokes. The separate I or self or me is busy working on being not separate or whatever else he, she's working on, gets freaked out. I mean, sometimes this happens for people when they go into the bliss that Susanna's going to tell us all about in a moment. Mm-hmm. I didn't forget. Right? You could just say, well, it's gone now, I can't remember. Somebody else talk. Because the one thing you can't do here is you can't just make it up unless it's true. Because then we're not in community, okay? We're bullshitting. And there's a certain point. Yeah?
Yeah, I was surprised that, like, I didn't realize this was the only one raising my hand.
Okay, tell us about the buzz.
But, I recognized when I was willing to observe without judgment my being, I would have those glimpses into feeling blissful and out of my body.
Yeah.
And it wouldn't last long.
Yeah.
And then I'd come back into thinking about different people, and then I do have a practice where when I decided I'm just going to believe in everybody, and I was like, I went into just believing in everybody, and that kind of like dissipated all my thoughts about all these individuals, and I was able to go back into, I've noticed my breath, and then there's a couple of times I was trying to work with my breath, and then when I realized, when I would simply observe, without judgment, and let my body be what my body is for now, then I'd go into this state.
Yes. Okay, so now what she's saying is, if you can observe without interfering, you could potentially go into bliss. It's one way to take that, okay? But here's the thing. There isn't actually anyone who's observing. There's a perception or an idea that I'm observing. I know the language is tricky, because what are you going to say? Observing was happening, and the next thing you know, bliss occurred. But it didn't happen to me. It just happened over in this area. Well, actually, as I was believing in everybody, it went out, and everybody was in the bliss together. You know, we all joined and flew up. So, you know, in a way, what's happening is the letting go into things as they are, letting things be as they are, opens up that space of natural happiness. It's not dependent. It's clear now. It's not dependent on things being this way or that. Any number of things could be happening. Thoughts could be happening, sensations, breath, sounds, any number of experiences. Again, the five aggregates unfolding themselves, and yet there's completely no interference with it. And then that dance is the dance of happiness or bliss. So the idea that I'm observing, see that? Okay, that's all it is. Again, if you want to, again, let the inquiry develop, look and see that you can't find the observer. Just look. No one can find the observer, and yet observing is happening. No one can locate awareness, and yet awareness is happening. None of this is actually pin-downable. You see? That's part of the liberation. It's the opposite, in a way, of what we've at times been taught in terms of succeeding, getting things done, you know, identifying ourselves as this or that, making a name for ourselves, which is all fine to do as long as you know you're not that, you see? It's fine to have a name for yourself. You know, some people are not going to be happy unless they actually go through certain things. Like my first meditation teacher, he had to become a multimillionaire in his early 20s. He had to get migraine headaches, had to, this is what happened. He had to get severe migraine headaches, and he had to see all this stuff. He had to play it out in a way to realize that there was nothing there to hold on to. There was nothing there to get. He had to burn it off, if you will. Okay? And that's beautiful when you accept what it is that you're actually here in a way to do, even though what we're talking about is beyond doing. You see? And sometimes we can get really complicated about what are we supposed to do with our life. You know? Am I doing it yet? Have I found my purpose? Actually, what happens is you realize you don't really have a purpose except to be here. If you're ready. If you're really ready. And if you're ready to really be here, it's one big, gigantic, pardon my French kiss. It's a biggie.
Who's ready, Paul?
Huh?
Who's ready?
Stop it, Huxley! It's a figure of speech. I don't know how to say it any different. You know, this I pronoun, right? So popular part of our language. I. you know, we talk about it. In conventional language, it makes sense. I saw the cat jump over the fence. We all agree. It gets a little weirder if we just go, cat jumped over fence. Ate food. Sleepy. And actually, it's interesting to, like, I saw this kid today that I hadn't seen in years. And he had moved away, and he came back to Gainesville a couple of months back, and I hadn't seen him, and I saw him today, and he's about 10. And we looked in each other's eyes, and there was this moment of just, everything dropped, it was just pure beingness together. And then I got in the way, and I said, remember me? He was like, yeah, it was like, because I ruined it. You see, it was like, you know, it's like, this is it, baby. You know, you don't need to remember. This is it. And who knows what would have happened if I didn't say, remember me. Maybe we just would have been in the remembrance. In a way, you could say, of the non-me. Yeah, which is just being. Who knows? That was clear. I don't know what his experience was, but I knew what it seemed like to me. Okay. So let's go into